host of the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast. Thanks for joining us today. Now, you know, we certainly see a lot of headlines about the influx of electric vehicles into our vehicle populations. And as regular listeners to the podcast will know, those of us in the aftermarket are also well aware of the continued existence of the internal combustion engine. Mostly when we're talking about that, we think of spark ignition, internal combustion engines, but we don't really talk a whole lot about the diesel future, as it were. Now, diesel's been around for, you know, more than a century and a half already. So with me today is Alan Schaefer. Alan Schaefer is the executive director of the Diesel Technology Forum. Welcome to the podcast, Alan.
Thank you for having us, Andrew.
I mean, there's a lot of history with the diesel. In the North American market, it's been a bit of a bumpy past as far as consumer acceptance in some cases. But what does the future look like for the diesel? Where does that fit into this kind of new age of motive power that we're looking at?
Sure. Well, it's diesel's kind of a unique technology, really. When you think about where we are, we're sort of straddling two worlds, right? We're straddling the world of energy abundance and fossil fuels that have built our economies and our modern life as we know it. And we have another foot in the future of what we call clean energy, where we are focused more on renewable fuels and technologies that are near or zero carbon emissions. And so when you think about those two spheres coming together, there's overlap, and that overlap is really where diesel fits. It's sort of sitting right in the middle with one foot in the past of the fossil fuel technology and then one foot in the future of using renewable energy. So we like to think about diesel as a technology that's perfectly suited to continue to be a big player in how we get our goods delivered around the world, how our ag industries are powered, our construction equipment, et cetera. So we see diesel having a really pretty bright future. And we can get into, there's a lot of reasons why that is, but it is a technology that's been around a long time. It's readily available everywhere in terms of fueling and parts and servicing and maintenance. We've got, we just sort of assume that it's there. Everything you get at the grocery store brought to you by diesel. You know, everything that flows through inland waterways and waterborne commerce powered by diesel boats. Railway networks all powered by diesel. So it's so much woven into the fabric of our economic life and existence that, you know, it's hard to imagine any kind of transition away from it, at least rapidly. I would say we certainly can anticipate that some sectors will maybe switch to some other fuels and technologies, but, you know, by and large, diesel continues to evolve itself. And that's one of the reasons that it's going to keep being a player for the future.
So the two things occur to me when I'm hearing you talk about the kind of promising and continued future of the diesels. You noted, it has one foot in the kind of renewable resources territory. And also, you know, that there's a lot of it out there, and it's hard to imagine not being there at first, and the technology moving forward and all that. Now, where does this fit in with the renewable resources for those who are maybe not paying as close attention to these things as you might be?
Sure. Well, if you wind back the clock to the original founding and patenting of the diesel engine, Rudolf Diesel actually ran that engine on peanut oil, and really had a very strong vision that these kinds of renewable fuels would be really the thing that powered the engine. And so, we're sort of coming back to that future in some ways. And what we have is a situation where all diesel engines of any kind can use some blends of these renewable advanced biofuels. And what we're talking about from a biodiesel perspective is fuels that are made out of vegetable byproducts. So it's food first, then fuel. So we have soybeans that are harvested, processed for food feedstock for animals, for our own food. And the oil that comes out of that is a byproduct. And that byproduct has great value when it's processed and treated in a certain way and can be used in any diesel engine. And traditionally what we're seeing is blends of that fuel. So biodiesel and 5% blend of that fuel and 95% in the regular petroleum, ultra low sulfur diesel fuel. And more recently, I would say in the last couple of years, B20 is kind of the fixture point. And all engine manufacturers warrant their engines to use these kinds of high quality renewable biofuels up to B20. Now, there's another kind of renewable diesel fuel that's out there, which is made from the same kind of feedstocks, but also can take in things like animal fats, waste fish oil processing, and it produces a very neat drop-in hydrocarbon replacement diesel fuel molecule. So renewable diesel is an advanced, super advanced biofuel. It has 50 to 80% lower greenhouse gas emissions than petroleum diesel. And it can be made from a whole variety of feedstocks, and that can be used in any diesel engine up to 100% blend. So it's about the processing for that particular kind of renewable. But as we look about ways to decarbonize different sectors of the economy, you know, some are going to be more amenable to battery electric vehicles, maybe, or battery electric technology, but some might not be. And some might want to do things soon, not wait 10 or 15 years till you get a big charging infrastructure network in place, et cetera. And so using these advanced renewable biofuels offers us a near-term way to reduce carbon very efficiently. Again, can be used in any diesel engine. You don't have to have some new different kind of technology.
Right, right. And one of the things that occurs to me when you're just talking here is that because it, whether it's biodiesel at, 20% or 80% and or 100% down the road, in certain, maybe even certain locations, right? It sounds like the technology itself allows for a variation, at the pump handle, right? I could, sounds like, have different availabilities, throughout a fueling infrastructure. It doesn't have to be like, the whole country on E20 or something, before I can even kind of make a move. Does that sound right?
Exactly. And I think, as we're starting to see, these niche markets develop and sort of realign how we think about fuels and vehicles and technology. And you might find cities that want to be more progressive with decarbonizing. They want to be doing something now and may not be prepared for or able to get themselves situated with big investments in charging infrastructure and all the necessary ways, permits and construction that has to put that in place. So overnight, they can switch to renewable fuels and have a very substantial impact on their carbon footprint. And so for cities and in particular companies that might want to have these kinds of adjustments pretty quickly, the use of renewable fuels in their diesel engines offers a very good way of do that. Now, we do have, the consideration that we probably don't have enough feedstocks currently to produce enough of these biofuels to replace diesel in the entire fuel pool. But as you point out, there are some specific sectors and urban areas, cities with particular air quality problems or sensibilities on climate change policy. These are the kind of ready-made, kind of quick start solutions. And, for every molecule of CO2 that we prevent from being released today, it's going to, put us further ahead for tomorrow. So the time value of carbon and how fast some of these solutions can come on starts to become increasingly important.
Right. Yeah. Again, from what I'm hearing, the transition as part of a solution to, kind of more biofuels at the diesel side is pretty. These things are never easy necessarily, but it, at least it can piggyback on the existing infrastructure, right? I mean, you don't need to build a whole new set of fueling stations because you're putting something different in the tank, right?
Right, you don't. I mean, there is some distinction on the pipeline suitability. So the most advanced 100% renewable diesel is pipeline stable and can be transported that way in volume. Most of the biofuels today, though, are supplied pretty much by tanker truck into fleet locations or convenience store and fueling locations. And so you don't really need to make any changes at the pump or in the vehicle. I think folks that make a commitment and start using biofuels in a significant way in a fleet application, let's say, will want to pay closer attention to their fuel filter maintenance for the first month or two that you're introducing these new biofuels. That means on the vehicle and at the dispensary that you're making sure that you've got, you know, clean filters in there, because these fuels they have high lubricity and they, you know, they have a great effect at the beginning of, you know, offering some cleaning power into some of the engines and fuel deposits that have been built up from other fuels. So it's just when you change over like that, especially if you do it very quickly and one day you're using regular diesel and the next day you're starting a new renewable fuel, it's just, you know, be smart about fuel filter maintenance and make sure your underground storage tanks are, you know, in good condition, that sort of thing. But it is a very low investment kind of switch.
Yeah, I mean, relatively speaking here, right? I mean, we're, you know, you're just mentioning, you know, make sure that you check your filters and your different things, because the cleaning powers of the newer fuels are significant. It reminds me of, you know, way back, I owned a diesel Jetta back in the 1980s and made the, what I'll call the advised mistake of putting some really good synthetic oil in it. And next thing I knew, the thing was leaking all over the place because the sludge had helped to fill in all the gaps. And that great oil change really gave me some issues. No problem with the oil, just it was doing its job better than what anything had seen in it at the time. So, that's, you know, something just to make sure that you're aware when you're changing up. I think that anybody who's a fleet manager making a significant change, probably going to be aware of paying attention to just how it goes in the early stages and making sure that all the bits and pieces of their own fueling infrastructure are operating well, that they've got a good clean supply of fuel coming in too, if they're using somebody different than they've used before and all that kind of things, right? But certainly sounds like, you know, again, compared to building a national charging infrastructure, as admirable as that is a pretty expensive thing that governments and municipalities and are all kind of struggling with, getting enough electric charging infrastructure out there and the right kind, and going, looking at diesel and moving more to, you know, a lower carbon footprint option on the fueling is relatively speaking straightforward, right?
It is quite straightforward, and it's not just limited to highway trucks, or, you know, we can use renewable diesel fuels in construction machines, farm equipment. We have a good number of ferries in the U.S. that have now started using 100% renewable fuels on the West Coast in San Francisco Bay Area, for example. The city of Oakland, California has switched their entire public fleet over to using renewable diesel fuels. So it is something that's not, you know, new, so to speak. This has all been going on for the last 5+ years in a pretty significant way. So the proof of concept is definitely there. And I would say that the biodiesel industry has done a huge job in improving quality. And, you know, in the early days when you had a lot of small biofuel producers and, you know, you get, you know, some good batches, bad batches. But, you know, since the new BQ9000 standard was implemented about 10 years ago, that industry has really produced some high quality fuel that is very consistent. And, so that's a great boost for folks that want to consider using these things, because, you know, you don't want to be in a situation where your, you know, fueling system is clogged up or your fuel injectors need servicing because you got a, quote, bad batch of fuel. And that's not good for anybody.
on the actual diesel technology side, when you're talking mostly about the fuel side, I mean, what's going on there that you know will prolong the kind of you know its position within the transportation marketplace however long we're still seeing diesel.
Sure. So there's really four things that keep diesel playing in the future. And we just talked about one of them, and that is the use of advanced renewable biofuels that are low carbon footprints. The others have to do with emissions and efficiency and use of hybrid technologies. So those that follow diesel issues over time know that today's generation of diesel is far removed from the generation of 10 or 20 years ago, when visible smoke used to be fairly commonplace. And since 2010, all the heavy duty commercial vehicles, of course, have been equipped with particulate filters and advanced selective catalytic reduction systems. So they're really achieving what we say is near zero emissions for nitrogen oxides, and which is a smog precursor, and particulate matter. So we have diesel today already at near zero emissions. And here we've begun a process in the U.S. this year where the EPA is going to adopt a new standard. And it's somewhat tracking what California did last year, that's going to even further tighten emission standards in the future. So the new generation of diesels come 2027 or so are going to be even lower in emissions than the ones we have today. The other reason that diesel keeps playing big in the future is that its efficiency is improving. And just in the last 6 months, the U.S. Department of Energy and Cummins Engine Company announced a major breakthrough in achieving a new standard of brake thermal efficiency, which is a big fancy term for how efficient can you make a diesel engine. It's a very principled kind of scientific test. And they were able to achieve a 55% brake thermal efficiency on a Cummins engine in a test cell. And that is so what, 55%? Well, it is a pretty big milestone, because it shows that we can make diesel engines even more energy efficient going forward. And when you think about how important that becomes, every gallon of fuel that you're not burning is a gallon of carbon dioxide emissions that's not being created. So efficiency is a continuous process of improvement for the diesel. And we'll see about the emissions standards, how much lower they go. We're already at, very close to zero for the commercial vehicle side. And even on all the off-road engines and equipment are there just the same. But at least for the time being, we only see that there's likely to be a tightening of the future standards for highway vehicles, not so much for on-road, although there is some chatter on that in California.
Right. Now, just backing up just a tiny little bit here, you mentioned the 55% brake thermal efficiency. How does that compare to Rudolf Diesel might have been doing, and maybe what we were even seeing sort of 10 years ago? I mean, where does that fall in the continuum?
I would say that the founder of the diesel engine would be so incredibly impressed with that milestone, because I think in the day that his invention was calculated thermal efficiency of about 18%.
Right.
So, what that means is that 18% of the fuel that was consumed went towards productive energy, the use of mechanical energy to turn a wheel or something. But it also meant that 82% of the energy that was used was wasted. So now we're at a situation where, more than half the energy potential that's contained in the volume of fuel can be applied to useful mechanical work. And, we're only losing a smaller percentage to heat and other losses. Gasoline, by the way, is, in the 30s, upper 30% efficiency. So diesel has, an advantage there, just an inherent advantage in the combustion technology. So, the idea of getting the engines more efficient is just one piece of the efficiency puzzle. There's the transmissions, the vehicle itself, sort of the whole package of parts and accessories have to play a role in this efficiency milestone that folks are trying to get to.
Right. You mentioned the kind of hybrid technology as applies to diesels. Now, folks who are fans of the railway will know that, in a sense, that's really what we've got kind of there in a lot of different structure. I don't want to put too fine a point on it, but diesel's providing the motive power for electric generation to drive the wheels, right?
Exactly.
in kind of the on-road world, but how does hybrid play out on the diesel front, and how is that maybe different from what we see in the gasoline direct injection made it to electric drives now?
Sure. Well, the technology for hybrids is evolving quite rapidly. As you know, it's become more of a standard kind of available parts and components kind of thing for light duty vehicles in the gasoline space. On the diesel side, in commercial vehicles, there's interest has sort of waxed and waned in this space. We had a lot of looking at hydraulic hybrids, which use hydraulic fluid to sort of store up energy in a period of time. And then we also had the use of sort of the conventional series or parallel hybrids emerge. And in buses and urban transit buses is really the place now where you have the most use of hybrid technology. And so diesel electric hybrid buses are quite popular in many, many cities around the world. It gets down to really an issue of cost and some of these competing technologies where you have, you've got, zero emission vehicles, all electric transit buses now competing with a lot of public dollars and incentives behind those, where there's no incentive money behind hybrids for a diesel electric transit bus. So you sort of see some of that influence likely to play out. But as we look forward to kind of the next round of efficiency requirements for commercial vehicles, I think, there's an increasing possibility we'll see more hybridization of some of these medium and even heavy duty vehicles. The components, are starting to be, such much more commonplace. And you might find that, as we get into trying to reduce every ounce of CO2 generation possible, that, we find these little ways. Before we thought, well, what's a couple of percent that you might get with a hybrid? The truck doesn't operate that much in city speed, stop and go, what's the advantage? But you might start seeing some of these technologies be brought back into play. And we certainly see a lot of hybrids in the off-road space. Some of the material handling equipment, like big wheel loaders that simply go into a pile, lift up a big scoop of aggregate or dirt or what have you, dump it somewhere else, that repetitive back and forth motion. Excavators are the same way, very repetitive process, great opportunities for hybridization of that technology. And I think, it's actually probably more prevalent in some of those machines and equipment than it is in some of the highway vehicles in the medium space today. So we'll see, but I think you might be able to see more hybrids. It won't be talked about a lot because it'll just be a small piece of a bigger integrated system.
Right. Well, it certainly sounds like, to misquote, Mark Twain, rumors of diesel's demise are greatly exaggerated, right?
I think so.
Yeah, well, so a lot going on, and there's places where it really works best, right? So,
indeed, and I think everybody is sort of realizing that we have a long way to go till we really understand all these new fuels and technologies. They have their own limitations, including the supply of rare metals and things that are necessary for battery production come from somewhat unstable parts of the world where there's lots of conflict and limited supply of materials and. Ultimately, those kind of issues could be quite substantial. And I think even just today, I saw a report out in the Wall Street Journal, someone questioning the availability of some lithium and rare metals for, if all of our battery electric vehicle dreams came true, could we produce the right kind of enough batteries to make it happen? And I think there's question about whether or not that's possible. But, I like to think of us, we're sort of all on the same decarbonization team, right? We all want to get emissions down and so we can have, a better future. And that's going to take a lot of these technologies. It's not going to be any one thing. And diesel's going to be around a long time. So it's important that it keep being invested in. New generations of technology find their way onto the roads. Because if those technologies aren't bought by truckers, then doesn't do any good to develop them. And, same thing goes with electric vehicles. If industries aren't fully sold on those or can't find a way to make them work, then where are we? We still need to move goods. We still need to support our societies and quality of life. So The diesel's definitely got a very strong future. We're pretty sure about that.
Good stuff. Well, that's a great message, certainly for everybody. Give food for thought for anybody looking to transition, on fleets and their own kind of concerns. And when they look at what's going on in the landscape out there for Motive Power. Alan, thank you so much for joining me today on the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Remember, take care of yourselves, take care of each other, and we'll catch you the next time.
You're listening to the Great Canadian Aftermarket Podcast, brought to you by the publishers of Indie Garage and Jobber Nation. Connect with us online at indiegarage.ca and jobbernation.ca, a brand of Chat Integrated Media.